I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Summer has officially started, but the political news just keeps on going. Lots to talk about on the Political Breakfast this week. I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host, bringing you opinions from the left and the right. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to opine on Georgia's fight over water and rivers with Florida. This as Justice Anthony Kennedy announced he's stepping down from the high court bench. We'll consider the implications for Georgia and the national political scene. And we're just a few weeks out now from the primary election runoffs, with early voting even sooner. Both parties still have candidates to pick in several races. We'll check in on that. And we'll look north to New York City. What does the surprise result in a Democratic primary there mean for Georgia, if anything? Our lineup is a little different this week. Republican strategist Brian Robinson continues his paid consultant work for the Casey Cagle campaign, so filling in for him is former boss, former Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland. And joining us for the first time, filling in for Theron Johnson, who has some family business, Democrat Kathy Woolard, former Atlanta City Council president and recently a candidate for Atlanta mayor. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for having us.
All right, let's start, obviously, with the decision or non-decision on water, Georgia, and Florida. The Supreme Court basically telling the special master, the lawyer who's been assigned as an expert to handle the case, telling the special master to do a little more work. Lynn Westmoreland, you've been in the legislature for much of the decades of this mess and in Congress. So is this basically the court saying, you guys really need to agree on your own because you won't like what we decide? Or is there something else going on here, do you think?
I think what the court was trying to tell the special master, you need to find a way to get around your conclusion that you were not able to involve the Corps of Engineers in this because of another ongoing lawsuit.
The Corps of Engineers manages Lake Lanier.
That's
which
correct.
Is the right, central issue.
And West Point.
West Point
but,
Lake, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Lanier, a lot of people draw out of Lanier, but they draw out of Altoona too. But I think Lanier was the main thing. And so what the special master had said is that there really was no way to prove harm to Florida.
Mm-hmm. And Florida and, is the plaintiff here. Florida suing Georgia saying, you guys take too much water and it's causing us harm, especially to our shellfish along the Apalachicola Bay.
Yes. And then you've got Fish and Wildlife saying that it's causing harm to the sturgeon and Shiny Bay pocketbook bank mussel or whatever it's called. So, you know, there's a lot involved here, but the main issue for us and for Georgia, I think, and really for places all over the country that draw out of these core lakes, was the fact that Atlanta does have the ability to draw out of Lanier.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Willard, the city depends on Lanier so much. Governor Deal this week said, that's one thing I regret, not actually reaching an independent deal with Florida that would kind of put all this to bed. The city really doesn't have much it can do here, does it? I mean, it relies on the state to reach a deal or not.
Yeah, the city can't. It's the region, I think, that has the biggest problem. And if you
unless things have changed, if you look particularly at Gwinnett and Cobb, a lot of those folks are on septic. So you're not being able to clean the water and return it back, whereas the city doesn't have that problem. And as we densify, we're still going to use more water, but we have a little bit more control over how much water we use. So
but,
I think,
you know, we don't get any credit for putting that water back in the river. And, of course, for a while we didn't want credit for it because it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
But now that they've cleaned it up, but we still, nobody gets credit for putting that water back in the river, and we think that's a problem.
Kathy, back to your point about the city and the region, it's basically wait and see for them, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And again, I do think the rest of the region, you know, the containment on growth becomes the real issue, and or those counties are going to have to start, you know, putting in real water and sewer systems and get these folks off of septic because they're holding on to too much water. And if there's restrictions, there's nowhere to go.
And the court could impose restrictions. In fact, the original ruling from Judge Magnuson, a federal judge years ago, basically hinted at restrictions. And everybody went kind of crazy then. But those fears have receded, but that threat is still there, isn't it?
I think so.
Well, you know, Richard Shelby, the last year I was in Congress, had an amendment.
Senator from Alabama
that said that if any withdrawal, anybody that withdrew that went exceeded the contract, would be investigated by the DOJ.
Department of Justice.
Oh yeah, no, I it was
which
very
is headed
serious.
By now another former senator from Alabama.
Right. Well, we got that stripped out. It caused a lot of controversy. In fact, that was the one thing holding that bill up from passing, and that all the Georgia guys said, no, you know, until we get that out, and we finally did. But what that would have done is, and Kathy can probably speak to this, but I know Atlanta, some months they may draw out a little more water than they're supposed to. Some months they probably don't draw out as much water as they have the right to do. And so the Corps has been letting that kind of balance out.
Mm-hmm.
And this would have put a complete stop to that.
Wow. So there wouldn't have been the flexibility.
Well, I mean, that's no way to run a city, right? I mean, you can't stop water usage month to month. You know,
no.
Well, we do obviously when we have watering restrictions and things like that. But you know, you can't
attract get it down
businesses.
To the gallon. Yeah.
You can't do it that way.
So quickly from both of you, do you think that Georgia will use this basic time that it's been given, even as the special master is gathering more information? Does Georgia see this as, okay, the special master might come up with something that might not be favorable to Georgia, so we better sit down with Florida? Will we finally see the two states hammer out a deal?
You know, I'm not the governor, but if I were, I think I would just wait, because I think that the Corps ruled really is leaning more our way than they are Florida's way. And the special master has already said he couldn't find any harm being proved. And so I don't know that I wouldn't set on it and maybe let Florida make the first move of coming and saying, oh, okay, well, we didn't get what we thought we could get, so we'll settle for this.
And the Supreme Court's term is over, so
that's right.
There's a little time here, which means the next governor gets this one, Kathy Willard.
Yes. I bet the next governor, if it's not Stacey Abrams, dodges it, because this is a tough one, right? You know, it is tough to untangle this situation, and while Governor Deal probably wishes he could have, he's probably glad he didn't, secretly.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. You know, it's complex. There's no real obvious solution.
Well, I know 8 years ago, he went into this governorship thinking that he was going to be able to do it because he was from Lake Lanier. I mean, he was very familiar
the Gainesville
with the water.
Area.
Yeah, very familiar with the water issue.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, of course, Justice Anthony Kennedy announcing his retirement. The impact in Georgia could be immediate because there are two Supreme Court justices, state Supreme Court justices, who were on the list that President Trump circulated a while back. Britt Grant, who's relatively new on the state Supreme Court, and Keith Blackwell, who's been there several years. They're both young, though. Kathy Willard, if either of them is chosen, Or if the president goes ahead with somebody who has a quiet litmus test on Roe versus Wade, the political fault lines are going to be here for years, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly the rest of my life will be impacted by this decision. And you know, it's very interesting that here, a couple months out from a major election, you know, we're going to vote on a Supreme Court justice, and Obama was denied that opportunity. So the impact is here. And you know, let me just say, the folks who are in my bubble are trying to send out the message to people, okay, you sat on the fence in the presidential election, and you're getting what we said you're going to get. So hopefully people are going to be paying attention.
As a Democrat, though, do you adopt the strategy of, okay, let's employ whatever we can in the Senate to block things, to slow things down, to try to play the waiting game until the next election? Or do you say, let's approach some Senate moderates like Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, for instance, or Susan Collins of Maine, and try to win their votes, depending again on who the nominee is, try to win their votes to block a nominee that Democrats might feel to be too extreme?
Well, they both sort of have the same impact. I mean, and Lynn would probably be the better one to answer this, but I do think Democrats are going to have to do everything they can do to block this until this election
They're
is over.
They're doing everything they can to block things now.
Yeah, well, you know.
I don't know if they can improve on it or not, Kathy. Well,
I don't know. You know, I mean, in a perfect world, I was thinking on my way over here about this situation. You know, in a perfect world, the outcome of this next election is that we return to, you know, objective district lines, because that's where this gridlock is. You know, regardless, and both parties are guilty of it. We've made a mess of the country. We can't decide on public policy issues to any real sensible degree, and you know, this decision is going to tip the court, and certainly for the gay community, and certainly for people who care about reproductive choice. This is a devastating development.
I think that what will happen is that, and it'll probably be John Roberts will probably move more to the center with Kennedy gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll kind of be the swing vote, but
he's the Chief Justice.
Yeah, so. I mean, the reality of it is that the Supreme Court, it is going to be for several decades, and Republicans were constantly telling our voters that this isn't about the presidency, this is about the Supreme Court. And I honestly believe that had Ms. Clinton been elected, I do believe that Ginsburg would be retiring, mm-hmm. which would have really given her three choices. Mm-hmm. And so this was, as Kathy mentioned, it was a battle over that. And I think these Senate elections are going to boil down to the Supreme Court, because you're not talking about a 6-year term. You could be talking about decades of people on the court.
Do you know either Britt Grant or Keith Blackwell as judges or as folks at all?
No, sir. I have no idea what their political swings are.
You've been in Congress for a lot of fights over judicial nominations, although you were in the House, so you didn't mm-hmm. have that confirmation vote that members of the Senate do. But does the whole hypocrisy issue now stick at all? I mean, Mitch McConnell blocked the Merrick Garland nomination that President Obama wanted to put in.
Well, that was a presidential.
That was a presidential election year. Yes. So it's a little different.
It's a little different to me, mm-hmm. probably not to Kathy, but to me, it's a little different. But I just see it becoming a bigger and bigger part. And what's happened is right now, the left or the Democrats are in the similar situation the Republicans are in. The Republicans' base got tired of the Republicans not doing what they said they were going to do. And so when Bernie Sanders, not to say he was the Donald Trump of the Democrats, but he did push their issues a lot further to the left than what the mainstream Democrat. And you know, I think that's what happened to Crowley up in the 14th District
in New York.
Of New York, is that they said, "Hey, this guy's been here 10 terms. We're tired of him. We want somebody that's going to preach the gospel that we want to hear, and that's what we're going to vote for. And so the Democrats have got their own little Tea Party kind of thing going on right now within theirs. And you can see we still got some fractures that we're dealing with. And so in the Democrats, I'll be honest, I've been in politics 25 years. I've never seen them fractured. I really haven't.
But Kathy Willard, do Democrats take the Supreme Court as an issue into elections as seriously as the Republicans do?
Oh, I think so. I think this year in particular, the timing of this favors Democrats, right? I think if ever there was a cold bucket of water in the face of Democrats to get out and do something in the election, the trend favors Democrats. And as long as the politics in Washington keep, you know, imprisoning kids, separating them from their parents, you know, Supreme Court nominees like this, we keep going to this in the fall, I think you're going to see, we saw a bump in Democratic performance here in Georgia during the primaries. I think you're going to see it in November.
But by the time the election comes along, that Supreme Court justice may very well have been confirmed and sitting.
Could be, but that doesn't mean people aren't going to have a good summer of being mad.
Yeah, well, that could be. But, you know, Mitch McConnell says that they're going to have somebody approved by the fall. I want to see that. I mean, I just don't see that happening.
We're going to learn a lot more about parliamentary procedure than we ever wanted to know.
Or rule changes, one of the two.
Both of those things, will really annoy Democrats that are organizing. I think the timing is perfect. I hate the situation, but in terms of, you know, just full-on election year politics, I think it favors Democrats.
Speaking of election year politics, up in New York, 14th District, Congressman Crowley, who's been in the Democratic leadership forever, was upset by a 28-year-old Democratic socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Kathy Willard, are there any messages? You've got two congressional runoffs here in Georgia in the 6th and 7th districts in the northern and northeastern suburbs. You've got, of course, Stacey Abrams, who has been pushing herself as a progressive from the beginning and doing some of the same kinds of grassroots work that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did. But is Georgia anything like the New York 14th District, which is the Bronx and Queens?
Well, you know, there might be more similarities than not, but I think the real issue that you're seeing play out is that, you know, Stacey Abrams started down this path long before, you know, we knew there was a path, right?
Yeah, she was carving the path. Touring rural Georgia. Her latest press release talks about rural hospitals, for instance.
Yep.
So she's been doing this for a while.
And she set it up perfectly. And I think this is an extraordinary year. And we talked a little earlier, you know, everything about electoral politics, you can put yourself out, but timing, circumstance, weird things happen that you have to juggle in the course of that impact an election that has nothing to do with who shows up to vote in a weird kind of way, or influences who shows up to vote.
Well, with Cortez, you know, he had not had a primary in 14 years or seven elections.
He wasn't used to running.
He wasn't used to running. And that meant that those people that elected Ms. Cortez had not had anybody else to vote for. And I think that's where the difference was at, is that he had become complacent. He was number four in the Democratic Party. He could have been the next speaker, and he didn't play that. I mean, he didn't. Her message was, I think, very pinpoint, direct to the groups that she knew.
Didn't bash President Trump all that much.
No.
He was not the issue. And this is what we hear from Stacey Abrams a little bit, too, is that we got to talk policy. We have to reach people with proposals and ideas. And that's exactly what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was saying, that You got to, if you're going to win people over, you got to tell them what you're going to do for them and how.
Sure. Well, I think as Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local, and that's true.
Well, you know, to your point about the incumbent not having had an opponent in years, he never had to deal with social media. He never had to reach voters in a way that, you know, even people who use it haven't quite figured it out. But if you've never used it, you got nothing.
No.
And I think that isn't the solution. She was very smart. She ran a really good grassroots campaign, so you can't say there's any real luck about it. But again, you know, timing's everything. Right candidate, to your point, Democrats didn't have anybody to vote for, and then they had somebody really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, that's the enthusiasm goes a long way in a campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
And Crowley was just, he was just kind of a bully kind mm-hmm. of appearance.
But,
and the charisma was not there. In fact, I thought it was interesting. They showed her at the moment that they announced the
New York One had its cameras on her when she realized she'd won.
Yeah,
her eyes got huge.
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, I've caught the car. Now what am I going to do? I mean, you know, here it is.
The key to her victory, though, is something that may translate to Georgia when it comes to just engineering your turnout, and that is getting out voters who haven't voted much before.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Willer, is that the key to any kind of plan for a victory for Stacey Abrams in Georgia, especially since she is saying, I am a progressive in a state that might be to the right of her?
Yeah, and I think that's everything in this race. And if you think about where the real contested races are in the state, down ballot, they're in the northern arc of Metro Atlanta, right? You got Fran Miller, who's facing a hot challenge with Sally Harrell for the state Senate.
Fran Miller, longtime Republican leader in the Senate.
Yep, I think he's going to lose, quite frankly. You know, you've got the Congressional District 6 with Karen Handel. I think Lucy McBath's probably going to take that. And you know, whether or not she gets to the finish line, people are going to be excited about it and into it. And Sam Teasley's got Mary Frances Williams up there in Marietta. Mm-hmm. And Mary, like,
longtime Capitol lobbyist and veteran and worker for various social agencies.
Yep. And her dad was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she won by 70% in a three-way primary and didn't spend any money.
Yep.
You know, so you've got this opportunity for other campaigns that are going to play on that excitement, and I think that's going to accrue to the statewide ticket.
No, I agree. Local, and I think that's the one thing a lot of politicians forget about, that sheriff's race or that city council race or state house or state senate race could play a big part in who turns out to vote for them and what the turnout's going to be. And when Karen, you know, was in the race with Oshlaw, there was about 40,000 Republicans that did not vote in her primary for anybody. And so they really had to do a lot of work to go out and find those 40,000 people who were mainly Trumpers, I'm assuming, and come back in and try to talk, you know, them into voting. So elections, and I'm sure Kathy knows this, having run more recently than I have, but they are very targeted now to individuals. And this is something President Obama brought to the forefront of campaigns. Kathy said social media.
Yeah. Identifying
people on Facebook.
He rewrote the book there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, brilliant. And so it's getting a lot more technical and a lot more scientific about voters now. And so it all depends on who uses that the best.
Moving over to the Republican side of things, at least in recent days, Congressman, the whole theme seems to be, I'm more like Trump than you are, between Casey Cagle and Brian mm-hmm. Kemp. That may help in a primary. Does that really generate enthusiasm among moderate swing voters who might want to know more about policy and problem solving than whether you're, an acolyte for President Trump?
I think it depends on what part of Georgia you're talking about. If you're talking about the 6th Congressional District, you know, probably not, because, you know, Trump lost that district to Ms. Clinton. So
mm-hmm.
that's probably not a good thing. If it plays, and I think they'll look at the media markets of where some of that might play mm-hmm. the best. I do think that Kemp has tried harder to be a more like Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the commercials, he's trying to be more like Trump. And I think Casey has stayed away from that. You know, I mean, the NRA thing mm-hmm. was one thing, and I think that
his Trump, last ad, though, talks about him as being just like President Trump.
Oh, really? I haven't. I've got the recorder, so I kind of go through the commercials. I hadn't seen a lot of the political ads lately.
Yeah. In his last ad, Casey Cagle certainly talks about ties to President Trump, and he's still, of course, trying to say he is the logical GOP heir to Governor Deal, who still hasn't endorsed in this runoff.
I think Cagle, you know, Cagle's in a tough place because I think he thought by now he'd be shifting to the middle. And so he was already sort of leaning on his foot, you know, as they got into the primary. And Kemp had to go kind of really hard to the right in order to get to where he got to. I still think Kemp has a tremendous opportunity to win this primary because he came in second and Cagle came in first. And all those votes that weren't for Cagle are going to accrue to Kemp more than likely.
But will they show up in a runoff in the middle of the summer?
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, you know, the turnout, and I mean, and it's just an old cliche in politics, but, you know, if people don't turn out, you can't win.
I just think it's really kind of ironic because the Republicans in the state moved that primary date to the dead center, hoping it would kill Democrats.
No. The judges did.
Yeah, okay.
The judges did.
Because of military absentee ballots,
the judges
moved it.
That's true.
I'll give it to you.
Let me say this. It's not just Republican. What the judges did was an incumbent protection bill.
Yep.
Because when you have qualifying in March and you got the primary at the end of May, the incumbent has more of an advantage.
Yep.
A bigger advantage than ever before with that. And then moving the runoff, you know, when I was in a runoff in 2004, it was only like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks.
Yep. Yeah. And now it's, what, 9 weeks?
Yeah, my first election, I had a runoff, and I hadn't even thought about that. You know, I got to the finish line, and then I looked around. I was like, "Oh my God, they moved it!" You know,
yeah.
Like I gotta do this for 3 more weeks.
No, that's right.
It's tough.
And see, in that period of time, you had to be a pretty good candidate to raise that money to go into. I mean, the mm-hmm. day after the election, you know,
you're on the phone.
We were on the phone. You know, we thought we'd have to raise $1 million for a 3 week campaign, and now they've got 9 weeks. I think that's too long, but because of the military ballot, and mm-hmm. you don't want to go back to being the Secretary of State's fault, but there was a reason that the judge ruled because of the delay in getting the ballots, but that was prior to, I think, this permanent of this Secretary
this,
of State right
this
there.
This Secretary of State. Yeah. Okay. Just real quickly, for both of you on runoff night, watching this GOP runoff, where in the state are you going to be watching to see, okay, what's the turnout and how is it breaking? Those will be the keys to winning the runoff.
Well, I think the, you know, that northern arc is going to be big. And then I think South Georgia, I mean, and I don't think you can look at any one particular part, but Georgia, you know, I've always heard it was three states, and I think it is definitely becoming more of three states.
North, South,
not
and
as
Atlanta.
Much as California, but you know, you do have that South, and then you've got that the Macon middle mm-hmm. part, and then the North Georgia or the Atlanta kind of part. And so, you're going to have to look at it by region, and Trump will enthuse different regions differently. Mm-hmm. And it's that metro area that's going to carry the day, I think, for whoever wins that runoff.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to play out in the general too. For all the statewide candidates, is the place where you can pick up more incremental votes is in the Metro Atlanta region and this Northern Arc piece too. But you know, for Stacey Abrams, for whoever comes out of the
Republican primary,
the lieutenant governor candidates, I think an intense focus of just trying to drag out every last voter is going to be what wins the day.
And I think you'll see, as Kathy mentioned before, I think you're going to see the Republican Party and a Democrat Party go into these districts where Fran Miller is at. And they're going to try to
pump the Dunwoody area.
Yeah, they're going to try to pump that up as much as they can for Fran, thinking that a vote for Fran will be a vote for the Republican. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to. I think you're going to see.
And I don't think that a vote for Fran is a vote for the Republican because you have so many pro-choice women in that district that are, and especially after the Supreme Court thing, that are going to sit up and go, I don't know. You know,
well, I know, but you still got that, you know, guy that's just kind of sitting there or girl that's just sitting there that might be persuaded just to go vote. And if they do, I don't know. I think he's got a better chance of getting the vote than Sally.
Well, you know, while y'all weren't paying attention, we moved all the gays. All the gay people moved into Fran's district because we just got sick of him. So, I think this is going to pop up and bite some people.
and you're talking about the Democratic candidate who's Sally Harrell, a former state lawmaker with a lot of experience and a lot of policy knowledge, too. So these are two pros going at it in that district. Well, that'll be
really. I think Sally was the first member of the Georgia legislature to ever breastfeed on the floor.
It was either that or Stephanie Benfield. I've forgotten which.
It was one of the.
I don't know.
It was one of it could have been Stephanie, but I was thinking it was Sally, yeah.
Okay. One quick final thing. The Atlanta Regional Commission approved a bunch of local transportation projects this week, which sounds really in the weeds, but talking about politics being local, Kathy Willard, this is the kind of stuff that we're starting to see the money actually turn into projects.
Yeah, this is a critical time. The next 100 days, MARTA's going to decide how they're going to spend that new 1 cent sales tax, and we can talk a lot about that. And then with these ARC projects for Atlanta in particular, you're talking about looking at money for arterial bus rapid transit. Basically, that means buses moving in traffic but having control of signalization. And then you've got some money for sidewalks on the Beltline, but not for transit. So that's a big deal for the city of Atlanta. We've got a lot to munch through. But, you know, Lynn's on the DOT board, and if Metro Atlanta and the state of Georgia do not get serious in a minute, we're not talking 10 years, 20 years, we're talking like the next 5 years about making some really groundbreaking changes and moving money, Atlanta's attractiveness to business, to residents, is going to come to a screeching halt.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Atlanta, we've always, and especially in the metro area, we've paid attention to the shiny things like the dome and, you know, I mean, Mercedes-Benz.
Huge one-off development projects like the Olympics or something like that.
We've always, you know, the shiny things, you know, where it was the zoo or whatever it was, we hadn't really paid a lot of attention to our infrastructure. And I consider the roads part of that and bridges and other things. So we got to start paying more attention to that. But Secretary Chao is coming to Atlanta.
Transportation Secretary.
Transportation Secretary is coming. And I think it's $100 million that we're getting for the bus rapid transit.
We got to talk sometime about Armour Yard being that real central staging facility for everything in the region. But Lynn, listen, if Secretary Chao wants to take a tour of the Beltline and why transit there is so important, I would be pleased to have the opportunity to show that, because this is 22 miles not in traffic that we own and is ready to put it down. Mm-hmm. Other states have done this in a matter of 2-3 years. We're still talking 40.
Yeah.
We can't do this.
You know, the Beltline has been a real revitalization tool, to the city of Atlanta in an economic development thing. I mean, you look at the Beltline and you see all the things that
The shiny stuff.
We got
some shiny stuff on that.
Yeah, you see the shiny stuff, but you also look at property values and the other things that's happened with it. And so,
Which has raised issues of its own,
exactly.
Of course, like affordable housing and community continuity.
Yes. So we have to use that transit and housing kind of piece together. And if we can get that right, you know, we can be well ahead of the curve. And we have to. This isn't a political, you know, party kind of thing. This is like being business ready is to be able to get people where they need to be and have people at all income and education levels ready to go to work right here where we need them.
Yeah, as I was sitting in traffic today, I saw Obama and Trump bumper stickers, so.
Yeah, we're all mad about it.
Yeah.
And just as a postscript here, as I was cleaning out my desk, because I'm no longer doing full-time work here at WABE, I was cleaning out my desk and my files, which go back a long way, I found an old Atlanta Journal-Constitution Horizon section from January 11th, 1999, the eve of Roy Barnes's inauguration as governor, and the headline was, "Can he fix the traffic chokehold?" So the more things change.
Yes.
Well, listen, all I want to say, if there's anybody from the, you know, AJC business side, please bring the Horizon section back. I loved that section. It was just made for me.
And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Filling in for Theron Johnson today has been Democrat Kathy Woolard, former Atlanta City Council president and recently a candidate for Atlanta mayor. And filling in for Brian Robinson, former Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland. Thanks to you both for filling in for Theron and Brian today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for having us.
Our thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. And if you like this show, subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That is a great way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head soon with lots more nourishing political conversation. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.